And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, January the 28th, 2016. 12:14 coming up on 12:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're tuned into the Now program with Scott Spears, and we've got a great 2 hours today. I'm going to tell you what's coming up in hour number two, a little after 1 o'clock today. We're going to be joined via telephone by Bobby Lewis. Bobby Lewis performed the hit song, number one song on the Billboard charts in 1961, Tossin' and Turnin'. So we will talk with Bobby Lewis about his hit song, Tossin' and Turnin', and his years in the music business via telephone at 1:10 this afternoon. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And do want to also let you know that the Marionaires are going to be live here in the WWGH studio on Sunday, this coming Sunday, January 31st, from 4:10 until 5 p.m., performing a live concert. So that's going to be a lot of fun as well. Don't miss that. The Marionaires live in the WWGH studio on Sunday, this Sunday, January 31st, 4:10 until 5 p.m. Now, our number one is going to be a lot of fun, too, because one thing we like to do here at WWGH is recount the history of Marion. And a lot of people remember a lot of mayors who have been here in Marion, Doc Brown, and of course our current mayor Schertzer, and Jack Kellogg, and Ron Malone, and Don Quaintance. But we've had other mayors as well, Yazel, and a mayor that goes way back in time is Hap Dollar, who was mayor many years ago here in Marion, but during interesting times here in Marion. Unfortunately, Hap is gone, but we are getting the next best thing today. Hap Dollar Jr., the son of Hap Dollar, who also has had a very interesting life here in Marion, which we will talk about today, and recount some of the great things that went on here in Marion then, now, and share some opinions, just have a good time. Hap, thanks so much for coming in today.
Well, you're welcome, Scott. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. Your father, for people who don't remember him or weren't alive, what years was he mayor?
I think he was mayor for six successive terms in the 40s, probably from 46 to 52 or from 42 to maybe 48. I'd have to go check the records to be exact.
What did he do before he was mayor?
He was an attorney. Practiced here in Marion. He started with Bill Davis way back in the 30s, and then he got an opportunity to go with Malcolm Strelitz, who was a corporate attorney, very successful, and so he left Bill and went there and stayed until the early 50s.
Now, the Strelitz family, weren't they on the Andrea Doria? Seemed to me like there was something about that.
Julia might have been. That was Strelitz's wife, but I'm not that positive. I think you're right, but I'm not sure.
Are any of them still here in Marion, the Strelitz family?
Oh, no, they're gone, but I think the daughter, Julia, is still alive, but she left. She married a gentleman from New York City, and I think she moved to New York City. She's been back occasionally, but no.
What kind of law did your dad practice?
He had a general practice. He did work for the Home Federal Savings and Loan as their attorney. That had to do with loans, abstracting, stuff like that. And then he did some trial work for Nationwide Insurance. He would defend their insurance claims.
When he has a successful law practice, what made him decide to want to be mayor of Marion? What was going on back in those days?
Well, Scott, I think one way an attorney could advertise, and back in those days, attorneys advertising in any format was prohibited by the bar associations and the state Supreme Court, and running for office was a way he could advertise, and a lot of attorneys did that. It wasn't just Dad. Kenny Robinson did it. Frank Phillips did it. He ran unsuccessfully for prosecutor against Stout, but he said his practice increased dramatically after he ran.
That's a very interesting point, because once you do some advertising, which is essentially what you do when you run for office, helps you quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
People know who you are, that's for sure, by the end of it.
That's right.
Win, lose, or draw. Who was mayor before your father?
I can't remember because I was a little kid and never paid much attention to that. So I can't tell you. Maybe Russell Snare?
Might have been. When your dad runs, and essentially might have been for advertising purposes, and wins, was that a good or bad thing for him?
Well, it was a good thing, but he lost a couple before he got elected. He ran against Kenny Robinson for city solicitor and got beat. I can remember when the election was going on, we lived next to Greenwood School and on Greenwood Street. Greenwood School is where the public library is now. Our house is gone, but the south building of the library on Greenwood Street is where the house sat. And I can remember as a little kid going over there and playing outside the door of the election room when they were going in there to vote. And I still have some matches that Dad had made, you know, to pass out in order to campaign a little bit. But he lost to Kenny Robinson. That was before Kenny started into the legislature.
When he did win the mayoral election, what are your remembrances of that night?
Very little, Scott. I was a little guy, maybe in the first or second or third grade.
Did anybody treat you differently being the son of the mayor?
No, not that I was aware of.
Because now mayor, and has been for quite some time, is treated like a full-time position. They are mayor and don't do much else. And it is a full-time position, I think, for them now. What was it like in those days?
Well, it wasn't a full-time position then. It was a part-time job. And so Dad could practice law in the office during the day, and then he'd go to meetings in the evening, and on the weekends he'd spend time at it. But as I remember, he was pretty careful about not letting the mayor's job run away with his office work.
What kind of a guy was he, would you say?
Dad?
Yeah.
Well, physically, he was a short guy. He was a control guy, and he had a pretty good sense of fairness, is what I remember.
Do you think he enjoyed being mayor?
Oh, I know he did. Scott, when they built the hospital, that was one of his pride and joys. He was mayor when they built it. He'd go out there after he'd leave the office at Saturday noon, and he'd get on the tractor and mow the grass. And Irene Tinklepaw was the administrator, and she'd have a meal for him out there. And then he'd get home maybe at 3 or 4 o'clock, and Mother'd be so provoked because he'd missed lunch. You know, she'd made lunch, and nobody showed up.
What was the city of Marion like in those days?
Oh, boy. Well, it was a city that we don't have anymore, where you had little shops up and down the streets that were vibrant, you know, and open. We had a bunch of different downtown merchants. The downtown was the focus of the city life. Friday night, people would be downtown because they'd been paid. They were ready to spend their paycheck for clothes, for groceries, things of that sort. And the farmers would come in town on Friday night and Saturday. It was very vibrant, not the empty buildings and empty spaces that you see up there today.
How many terms was he mayor?
Three. Two-year terms.
They were two-year terms back then. Why do you think he continued to run for mayor? Was it just a job he enjoyed?
I think he enjoyed it very much. He was an outward-going guy.
The last time, why did he not run for re-election? Or did he run the last time?
No, he didn't run. He retired. I can't give you a specific reason other than he probably decided it was time to focus on the family. I was just out of high school and ready to go on to school, and I had two younger sisters behind me that were starting.
Obviously, we talk about the hospital. What would be some other things that went on under his term that he would have been proud of?
Well, they built three things: the hospital, the airport, and the downtown YMCA while he was mayor. And I think the same contractor did all three of them. The gentleman from Bell Fountain, I can't think of his name offhand, but he was a very big contractor. The interesting thing about the Y, Marion – underneath it has bedrock, and in some areas it's very close to the surface. You get down into Vernon Heights, back or north of the old Isley homestead there on the boulevard, and those homes don't have full basements because about 6 feet down was the bedrock. And they anticipated bedrock very shallow in the Y. But when they dug it out and built it, they found out there wasn't any bedrock. The contractor gave them back the money that they had estimated they were going to use to blast through that bedrock.
My goodness. I don't know if that would happen today.
Everything's the money business today, I doubt it.
It's a little different world. When we think about politics today, we think about people getting very sharp elbows during campaigns. What were campaigns like back then?
Oh, gosh. I was so young, I really don't remember. They didn't get nasty and personal like they are today. It was a different mindset. People, voters weren't angry like they are today.
Your father was a Republican.
Yes.
What do you think, in your opinion, made him a Republican? What were the criteria for being a Republican back then?
Well, I think what made him a Republican when he was a young kid, his family was poor. Grandpa, Dad's father, had an eighth grade education. He and his brother ran a music store on East Church Street, and eventually it was over there north of the Marion Star building. The music store went under in 29, and so Grandpa started tuning pianos. And so Dad had to work at a young age. He was driving a horse and wagon carrying ice, the old ice wagon. You know, where the driver would stop in front of a home and go back there and throw the canvas off, and the ice would be under there in big blocks, and he'd cut it or take a pick and cut it into 25-pound blocks, and then they had these big sharp tongs, and they'd lift it off the truck and carry it into the house and stick it in the ice box. The ice box had a compartment on top of it where the ice cube sat. And that kept the food cold. And he did that. Grandma said that he always bought his own clothes after he was 13. You know, he earned. He had a sense of earning. He had a sense of work. He had a strong work ethic. And I suppose that's what made him look at the Republican side of Harding. Dad said that Marion was strongly Democratic until Harding got elected, and after that, Marion flip-flopped, and that lasted for a long, long time.
Do you believe that, because we hear now the parties come on and talk about Marion in general, and we had a member of the Republican National Committee on not too long ago who said Marion is a Democratic city, but we have had far more Republican mayors than Democratic mayor, even though we currently have a Democratic mayor. What's your feeling? Is Marion a Democrat? Have we went back Democratic, or have we stayed Republican?
I think we've gone back Democratic, and I understand that. Marion's basically a working community. Dad always said Marion and Mansfield were neck and neck. And back in the 20s, Westinghouse was looking for a place to put a big factory. And all of a sudden, Marion was competing for that against Mansfield and other places. And all of a sudden, a great big factory became available in Mansfield because the company that owned it went bankrupt. That's where Westinghouse went. And Dad said from there on, Mansfield really got way ahead of Marion economically. You know, they got a higher economic level. In Mansfield, it produced a higher economic level of people, and Marion just pretty much stayed working.
Did your father ever talk about any regrets as mayor when he had some political clout?
I don't think so, Scott. I think he was really proud of the stuff that occurred under his administration.
During your father's time, and your time as well, you wouldn't date back to President Harding, but your father would. Mm-hmm. Marion was really a hub of, with Norman Thomas and President Harding, a hub of politics in those times. Did he ever share memories of what it was like during the Harding times, or do you have memories of things that were going on in the 40s, 50s?
We never talked about that. I was too young to have any interest, and so I'm sure I didn't ask him. And I don't remember much about that era.
How long did your father live?
He died in 1980, and he was about 80 years old.
So he had a pretty long life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So he saw a lot of things after. What did he do after he was mayor?
Practiced law until he was about, I'd say, 75 or somewhere in there.
In the meantime, you went into law.
Yeah, I did.
What spurred your interest in that?
I suppose admiration of my dad. I followed in his footsteps 30 years later. It was funny. When I got out of high school, there wasn't any choice. He expected me to go to the school he went to join the fraternity he did. And it just kind of made a logical sequence. And I look back on it, and I'm very grateful. You know, some kids would be resentful, but it wasn't that way for me. He knew me well enough, you know, to know that I would be comfortable in that.
And what kind of law did you practice?
Mostly real estate, probate, which is wills and estate planning, some income tax. I did not do trial work.
Now, did you practice here in Marion?
For 40 years.
Your father lived a long time after he left the office of mayor. Did he ever have the itch to get back involved in politics?
No. He was a very strong Republican. When Taft died, we had black crepe over the house. When Roosevelt died, why, it was all joy. And, you know, this kind of politics is kind of funny.
Following in your father's footsteps, did you ever want to be involved in politics?
I didn't want to have anything to do with it. I'm not a joiner. I don't require a lot of structure in my life.
Was there any other reason beside that that politics did not turn you on?
I don't think I'd have the patience that a politician has to have.
It's kind of interesting because I say we are in a political year and those elbows do get tough. By the time you were practicing law in Marion, how do you think things had changed politically, socially, since your father had been mayor?
Well, they had more lawyers in Marion. You know, the role of them, the roster grew. I still participated in the era where they were friends. Law was not only their vocation, it was their avocation. Their social life centered around their lawyer friends. There was a lot of camaraderie. There were a lot of parties. They had a group of lawyers that would go to Ohio State games in Columbus and away, and they enjoyed each other. That doesn't happen anymore. That's all gone.
What do you think caused that?
Oh, the electronic media. The electronic media divides people up into consumers.
It does in a way. When your father was elected, it's interesting because as the Marion Star had been here, but broadcast media had just really come into play with WMRN starting in 1940. Did the media play a part in your father's time as mayor? Did he have to go down there and do interviews? Did he like the media?
Scott, I have a black and white photo on my living room wall that shows Dad at WMRN with a mic and the announcer right next to him. Sure, it played a part, not like it does today.
Did he like that part of it?
Sure, he liked it. If he didn't like it, he wouldn't have done it.
When do you feel Marion took a turn from what it was to what it is?
Scott, the most symbolic thing I can remember is this. Here we are at Southland Mall, okay, this great big development. And I remember this. All the money that Marion needed to grow on was supplied by Marion banks and Marion lending institutions and Marion people. You know, they'd save, the banks would lend the money out, and the community would grow. All of a sudden, in this great big field way south of town where the mall is today. It was a field that had crops in it. There were three buildings, Super Duper, Twin Fair, and I can't recall the third one. And what was different about that was this. The money that created that came from Dayton. It came from outside Marion. All of a sudden, money was coming to Marion and controlling Marion that wasn't from Marion natives. And that was a real turning point. It didn't seem like much, but when I think back about it, that was very symbolical to me.
Why do you think that happened?
That probably happened because the larger communities had a lot of wealth, and that wealth was trying to figure out ways to put their wealth to work. And in the smaller communities, it wasn't as competitive as it was in the big cities. So they started to look outside of their metropolitan areas in order to generate the wealth that they wanted from their funds.
In the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and even in some ways into the 80s, we had, you know, a lot of people considered the shovel a turning point. Marion Power Shovel, Tecumseh, the Key Club was up at the Harding Hotel. When did that era come to a halt, and why did it?
One of my friends was Ed Roberts. Ed was the prosecutor. And Ed always said that because of the labor problems, Marion was redlined. Nobody would ever admit it. Nobody would ever talk about it. But we had some pretty brutal strikes here. I can remember going through the Tecumseh area after that strike was over. That looked like a Civil War battlefield. And my guess is some of that caused the industry to pack up and leave, and that made a big difference. You know, whether that was the defining event, I don't know, but I know that was part of the problem.
Certainly when people look at those times, and I know there was a pretty bad strike, I believe it was at the Shovel. There was another business I know that had a strike that was pretty severe, and I think that was back in the 50s. I can't remember. We just heard a tape on
well,
that.
Motor Products was out there where Whirlpool is, and they finally left because of those kind of problems.
My question is, I guess, because we still talk about unions today, certainly from the side of the striker, we know why the employee was striking. They wanted more wage. Why were the employees, particularly here in Marion, because this didn't happen everywhere else. Obviously, it happened up in Michigan in some places. Why were they unwilling to the point of we will relocate, to the point where we will battle in the parking lot to do that? What was the elephant that no side was willing to budge on that ended big-time industry here?
Well, I don't think either side was willing to give. You know, somebody needed to start to compromise, and it didn't happen.
Do you think that remains a problem, compromise?
Oh, that's the essence of life. I mean, I look at legislatures, and everybody hates the politician, but he's the oil that makes the car engine work. If without the oil, the car engine won't work. And the politician wheels and deals and all this stuff, but basically he gives us a framework that will work to a certain point. It may not be one extreme or the other, but the system works because of this oily politician.
Being that you did come back here to Marion to practice law and your father did live until 1980, I want to run through some of the mayors that came after him. To get your feeling on them, what kind of job they did, and what your father thought of him, if he was around. Let's start with Mayor Yazel. Do you have any memories?
I remember Gene pretty well. He practiced law. I practiced with him, and I think he was a good mayor. He had a different style. He was an engineer, believe it or not, and I think he did some good stuff. He got beat in the long run, I think, by... I know what it was. He wanted to run for common pleas judge, and he got beat by Judge Wiedemann.
A gentleman who had a long term here in Marion, three terms, tried to get a fourth, Don Quaintance.
I barely knew Don. My feeling was toward the end of his term was that he kind of took it for granted. He worked that hard, not at the job, but at the campaign.
Ron Malone.
I know nothing about him. Very little.
When he was mayor, what were times like here in Marion?
I think that was the time when our city started to deteriorate a little bit. You know, you started to see empty buildings, plants closed. All of a sudden, things that used to work didn't work. The plants produced a level of managers that made it nice for the country club. All of a sudden, the country club starts to have trouble because those people are no longer in the community. That's one example. I'm sure there were others.
Then came a mayor, and for some reason, this is the name people still go back to, Doc Brown. People remember him very fondly.
Some do and some don't. He was a very dynamic and outspoken guy, and... when he was mayor, was at an older age, he served his work time as superintendent of schools and had retired, and he came back from retirement to be mayor. And he was a very dynamic guy, but he made enemies as well as friends.
You know, that's an interesting side of him. For people who just remember him as this great guy, and a lot of things he did were good. What was he like as a human being?
I had no real close personal contact with him. I remember he and his wife, but I didn't know him socially or personally.
Why do you think he made enemies?
Well, he was a real control guy. I mean, once he decided... what the solution was, it was his way or go, you know, hit the road, and that bruised some people. You know, in some ways he was very brutal.
For people who look back on his time and think that was the real great time in Marion's history, how do you see it? You were here as a citizen.
Well, I don't remember anything going bad. You know, I think it was positive, but whether it was Marion's best time or not, I surely don't have an opinion on that.
Then came the longest-serving mayor in Marion history, Jack Kellogg.
Okay.
What was your feeling on him?
Well, I think Jack was a good mayor. It was difficult for him to speak publicly, but he did a good job.
Why do you think he was able to hold that position for 16 years?
I can't answer that. Maybe our politics just stabilized for that long. I don't know.
For people who say, and it was the knock on him in a lot of elections, even from his own party, that he made deals with the Democrats, I guess is the easiest way to put
okay.
it. And he's been in and talked about that was the rap on him. Did you ever think that was the case? Did you ever think that he gave too many?
If you're going to accomplish anything, you've got to make deals. Politics is compromise. That's why it works. We have all these competing little elements in our society. And, you know, I guess the example I think of are the Arabs. My gosh, they've got all these little religious and tribal groups, and they can't get it. And somehow we do, but it involves compromise.
Why do you think people understood that just Kellogg left office in 2007? Why don't we understand that now? Because we don't compromise.
We've got the best elected officials money can buy, okay, and to me that's a serious problem. And so basically what happens is we get results that favor the people with money, the big drug, the drug industry has its the lobbyists and stuff like that, and they have too much control over the politician because they control the funds. And I think that, we've got to deal with that problem somehow, or we're really going to be in trouble down the road.
Our current mayor just won re-election for term number 3. What do you make of Mayor Schertzer, who first time in, I think it's 8 years of Doc Brown, 16 years of Kellogg, so it'd be the first time in 24 years we had a Democratic mayor.
I don't know of anything bad that he's done. He's probably produced a pretty stable administration.
Being that when he came to office, Ohio, just in general, and in the country, was in kind of a bad place financially, what do you think now? If you had to describe Marion today, how would you describe it?
Well, I guess I would describe it. It looks like it trends down. I get sad about all the drug problems that seem to get worse every day. There's just a quality that's not here anymore. The caring, the socializing, people are more isolated, and I think that's the electronic media. It isolates them.
How do we fix it?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I'm not sure we can. I laugh about the cost of medicine. I look at that and say, well, the way to fix that is do away with insurance, and then they'd have to accept what people could pay. Anytime there's a big pot of money there, the people that tend to benefit from the money really squeeze the resources out of it.
We were talking before we went on air about presidential candidates coming to Marion. In 60, Nixon came here to campaign. I believe he was back in 68 when he ran again. But we saw a resurgence of that in the last two elections. Former President Bill Clinton was here campaigning for Hillary in the primary 8 years ago. I think Hillary did come 8 years ago. Joe Biden came 4 years ago, Vice President of the United States, a sitting vice president, came here to campaign for President Obama, and the Republican nominee, Mitt Romney, and Paul Ryan, who was his vice presidential candidate, Speaker of the House today, came here together and had a rally at the Coliseum. Is Marion still important politically?
Probably not. There's not enough money here to make a significant dent in the political structure.
Why do you think they come here?
Well, they come here because, I'll tell you, Scott, the one thing we've got left that's got power is the right to vote.
That's true.
And they come here because they want votes. I don't think they expect any multi-million-dollar contribution from any Marion native or anything like that, but they want the votes.
Did you ever have personally a strong political philosophy?
Well, I tended to be thrifty, and I suppose that sticks me in the Republican camp, but I wasn't as grounded in Republican politics as my dad. I don't feel like either party really represents the way I feel.
When you look at the things that are going on, just because basically on the front page of every paper today, it's Donald Trump will not be competing in the presidential election tonight, or presidential primary tonight, the debate on Fox. He said he will not do it. The Tom DeLay released a statement yesterday that he thinks Hillary Clinton will be indicted. A man who self-describes himself as a democratic socialist is drawing 20,000 people crowds in Iowa and leading the polls. How do you see this, our country, right now?
Scott, I think people are angry. The the people that work are finding out they work harder for less, you know, whether they take tax money out of them or whether the inflation takes buying power. Inflation's an insidious thing. The government overspends and then they inflate their way out of it, you know, and they can do it, but you and I can't. And there's so much that doesn't work well. Everything I see doesn't seem to work as well as it did, and I think it makes people angry, and so you get this polarity, and you wind up with people searching for somebody that they feel represents their feelings, and it's nice for the media. I mean, Trump's real colorful. He's good copy.
But why are people so brutal, though?
I think that's the way life comes at them. I look at a commercial system that says if you don't consume, you know, you're not living. You know, buy this, buy that. You can't be happy until you have this next product. And so the people do this, and then they find out they've overdone it. Credit all of a sudden is their right, but the trouble with credit is it cuts both ways. You know, you may get something you want now instead of later, but you're stuck. You got to earn the money to pay off the bill later, things are out of whack, and I can't see them getting back.
Ohio and Florida, most analysts will say, play a gigantic part in the election. For the first time in a long time, we have a politician running for president from Ohio. Our governor, Kasich, is still in there. Why is he having such a difficult time, do you think?
He's not colorful like Trump. You know, he's more down to earth, I think. And the media just doesn't, they don't get enough copy out of him.
When you look back at your childhood and your days of practicing law, aside from the politicians, who were the movers and shakers in Marion who made Marion good, the people who gave money here, the people who left their businesses here? Who were the important crowd?
Well, Henry True was one that had been around a long time. He was a bachelor, Marion County Bank. He owned a lot of it. Wayne Jenkins, Walgreens downtown. Judge Jenkins and his brother were Wayne's sons, and I can remember when the issue was on the ballot to generate the money for the overpass. And Wayne didn't like that, and I don't remember why, but I remember that the public passed the issue anyway, and how provoked he was about it. But to me, that was just an example how our local control was just slowly disappearing.
When we look back, and a lot of people have left us in the last 10 years or so, but a lot of people who gave things and gave things to the community who are remembered as important people, I'm just going to throw some names at you, and you tell me if you knew them well or what you thought of them in a general sense. One would be Judge Charlton Myers.
Charlton was a scholar, and he loved history, and he hung on to a lot of Marion County history that otherwise would have been lost. He was a good attorney. He wasn't a trial guy. He was the guy that would do the head work and then give the result to the trial guy.
Oliver and Merle Hamilton.
Very community-oriented. They ran the quarry north of town. They wound up very community-oriented.
Howard and Madge Guthrie.
very, very community-oriented. Madge especially. I think Howard had his demons, but by and large, he contributed very much.
Lou Conkle.
Lou was a perfectionist, and he ground real slow, but what he did was high quality, and he was a pretty good attorney.
Trella Romine.
Oh, gosh, dear Trella. Trella was Mrs. Marion County History. She gave, and she's still giving, even though she's gone.
The Brown family.
They were very Marion-centered. You know, George worked hard on the new Y. He worked hard on the drives for money for his church.
Who are those people today? Everybody we just mentioned is deceased.
Yeah, I can't answer that. I'm not that much with it anymore. I'm not, you know, my time in life, I'm not there.
These people, it was important to them that Marion was represented, whether it was preserving history. There are rooms and buildings and things named after these people because they spent their money here. Do you think, just an opinion, that there's a consistency of that today?
I see some of it when I look at the what is Marion Foundation. I see a lot of people that have donated to that, and I know that does a lot of good for Marion. I see the people that put their effort into the Ohio State branch at Marion. That's been a wonderful thing. I see the Palace Theater that's been restored. You know, people that have put effort toward that's a wonderful thing. There are good things in Marion.
When do you think Marion's best days were?
Well, I look at it personally. You know, for me, the right time in my life was back in the 40s and 50s. And I enjoyed that time, partly because of age, that time's gone, but also because there's been a tremendous change in the way people live. That time's gone, too.
A lot of people, one of the big remembrances is Crystal Lake Amusement Park. Why do you think that still fascinates people
Scott,
today?
Scott, what a story. Crystal Lake did have an amusement park. And my son lived for several years at Hummelstown, which is right next to Hershey. And we'd go to Hershey Park and take his young kids there. And I remember one evening my granddaughter was on the carousel in the park, and I happened to be walking around it, and I look at this plaque on the side of the carousel at Hershey Park, and it says, "This carousel was made by such and such a company. Hershey bought it from Crystal Lake Park in Marion, Ohio in 19-so-and-so. I just about fell on the ground. I couldn't believe what I was looking at.
You know, it's amazing. And for anybody who still has interest, I believe it's still there. A gentleman compiled a great history of Crystal Lake. It's at the library. You have to ask to see the book, but it's a gigantic book of just... And people still want to know what the roller coaster's name was. I don't know if it's hard to believe that Marion had an amusement park. That's just a stunning thing for people.
Well, there are postcards of it. I think I was told a roller coaster went over to Indian Lake, and, of course, that amusement park's all gone now.
Yeah.
Crystal lasted in Marion for a long time. When the park closed, they still used the roller rink, the big building. We had a prom. They used to have the charity ball in it. We swam there. It was a beautiful place to swim. The water was crystal clear. You could see the fish down in there.
What is your fondest memory of your father when you think about him today?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'll tell you a funny story, and this is one that makes me chuckle. When I was just getting ready to leave for college, I started to date a gal from the Catholic high school. And I had a lot of good Catholic friends, and so did Dad. But I don't know why he had this little hang-up about him. And so I dated her with real regularity that summer. And one evening he sits me down at the kitchen table and in effect tells me I better start looking elsewhere for a girlfriend. If I don't, we'll settle it out in the backyard. He was smoking two packs a day of Lucky Strikes, and I was playing football. And I didn't have the courage to challenge him, but I'll never forget that.
You know, Hap, this has been an hour that has flown by. I've enjoyed it. I hope you come back, because there is a lot of history we certainly still could cover. And I think these are times that give us great reflection on where we are today and how we came to be. I think sometimes people look at the empty buildings and they wonder what was there and why Marion was thought of in a certain way.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Scott.
I appreciate you coming in. Hap Dollar Jr., the son of former mayor of Marion, Hap Dollar Sr. Don't forget the Marion Airs concert live on Sunday, 4:10 to 5 p.m. And coming up next hour, about 10 minutes, Bobby Lewis, performer of the hit song Tossin' and Turnin'. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to WWGH Radio.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 LP, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. Just listen to former star of the Jeffersons and 227, Marla Gibbs.
Where did the name Marla come from? It's so unique.
I made it up.
Really?
My name is Margaret. And I thought that was too mouthy. Margaret Bradley. There's no rhythm to it. Of course, it doesn't. I think in the end it doesn't matter, but it's just whatever you think. So I thought Marla, I wanted the M, so Marla Gibbs had a better rhythm to me.
Marla.
And so I don't know, that's why it was successful, but it was successful. So.
You're the only Marla I've ever known, and thank goodness, because you're one of a kind.
Oh, there's two Marlas.
Oh, there is another Marla.
Yeah, Danny's daughter. No, that's Marlo.
Oh, that's right, Marlo.
They keep calling me Marlo sometimes. I say, no, that's Marlo Thomas. I said, Marlo has the money, and Marla is after it.
Do you regret not getting as many award Emmys, things like that? Does that ever factor in?
No, because I say the work is its own reward. You can't decide who's going to give you an award, but if you're doing the work, as long as you're appreciated for the work, I think that's the best. The awards are nice. I mean, it'd be nice if I got one, but I was up four times, so I was a bridesmaid, never a bride.
Marla, when you get a role today, you say you still do auditions. Does the money matter?
Yes, it does. Because I blew all my money. I won't say I blew it, but I owned a theater and I owned a jazz supper club, so all the money.